This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. 2 weeks ago, the Shumlin administration announced that Secretary of Human Services Doug Racine had stepped down. Racine's version of events was different. He said he first heard of the change when Shumlin's chief of staff, Liz Miller, and administration secretary Jeb Spaulding sat him down and told him he was being removed.
You know, there may be some hints out there, but there was mostly things that had been said and, discussions with some of the governor's staff about how they wanted me to present things. And so I didn't feel that it was that serious. We were working through some of the more serious issues in the agency. I felt very much supported by the governor and his staff. I felt that this level of satisfaction was high. And in fact, the governor said publicly that he was satisfied with the job I was doing. It was just the direction in the future that he was concerned about.
So that was Doug Racine's reaction to being let go by his employer. Our guests today will pick up on a couple of things he talked about. For one thing, not knowing beforehand that the job he was doing was unacceptable. They might also want to discuss how wise it is for someone who's just been fired to talk publicly about his former employer. Today, we're going to talk about the do's and don'ts of firing someone and of being fired. It's something that many people go through over the course of their career. If they're managers, they may be in the uncomfortable position of telling an employee it's time to pack up. And for the people who get fired, finding another job is a big worry. So we're going to look at all of that today. And to help us wade through the issues, we've invited Tammy Bouchel, Human Resources Manager for Edlund Company, to join us. Edlund is a Burlington company that manufactures commercial kitchen appliances and has 105 employees. Tammy, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
We're also inviting Lizzie Post with the Emily Post Institute to join us for some tips. Welcome back to the program, Lizzie.
Thank you so much.
Tammy Bouchel, let me start with you. Is firing someone ever easy?
Never. It is never easier. You're always thinking about how that person's going to react, but because you're affecting their livelihood, their family, it's never a good situation. But usually an employee should never be surprised. So if a supervisor or a manager is doing their job correctly, they should be having constant communication with that employee so the employee knows I'm doing a good job or I need to step it up.
Which still doesn't necessarily make it easy for the employer then to do it?
No, because you have compassion. You feel bad. I mean, the employee has a job because they need to work. They need to pay their bills. So nah, it's never easy. I don't care how many times you do it. It's not easy.
We're going to talk a little bit about what this is like from the perspective of a person who is being fired. But Lizzie Post, for the person, the manager or an HR director who has to actually sit down with an employee and do that, how should they mentally prepare themselves?
Oh, gosh. It's one of those really hard things. I mean, so much of etiquette and what I talk about is about building relationships. And this is a time when you have to end a relationship. And I think Tammy's right, going into it with that compassion and just an understanding that this person's going to be upset. I mean, they may see it coming. They may not see it coming, and it really could be a very emotionally charged exchange, and therefore I would try to prepare myself by really not taking any bait, not trying to engage if they start to react badly to anything. It's probably from a legal standpoint as well, something that you need to really mentally prepare yourself for. It might even be something you have to practice with a supervisor above you or have someone else in the room. It really depends. Each circumstance is so different.
And in fact, that have somebody else in the room piece of advice, Tammy, I think that's something that you think is actually a good piece of advice for anybody who has to
absolutely
do firing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Why?
Just because, because it can be emotionally charged and could become heated. Oftentimes, when you're trying to listen to an employee or you're trying to convey, I'm sorry, but we've been over these types of things. We've discussed this numerous times, et cetera. They may hear something totally different because they are in an emotional different spot than you are. And having a third party in the room, even if they're not participating, they're just sitting there, they could be documenting, is important just because they can take the notes and they can reflect back, or they could say, can we stop for a second? Did you mean X? Or let me repeat what you said so I'm clear. So it just helps to have a third party there.
We're talking today about the do's and don'ts of firing someone or of being fired. And listeners, we've been hearing from you since we posted this on our Facebook page and on our website yesterday. People talking about their own experiences with getting fired or having to do the firing. We'd like to hear that. I'd love to hear if you think, in fact, it was ever a good thing for you. Did you learn something about yourself or about your work habits that have helped you in future career choices? Or was this just a purely negative situation for you? And any tips you have for somebody who has been fired, how to behave, how to make sure that you're putting yourself in a good position to get a job down the line. Our number, if you'd like to join in, is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. We got a note from Kevin who says, during 15 years in nonprofit management, I have thankfully only had to fire three people. Even though each was fired for good cause, stealing, lying on timesheets, etc., it still felt awful having to make that call. It's horrible to be fired, but also difficult to be the one doing the firing. And Lizzie, that's sort of what you're saying here too, that this is, you know, as you said, ending a relationship, that employers are trying to build relationships.
Absolutely. And it is really hard on employers. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think it's probably much harder on the person who's been fired. They're up against quite a lot more. But it's not a fun part of being in a managerial position. And it's certainly something that weighs heavily on you. As Tammy was saying, you know this person. You know whether they have a family or whether they had plans in their life. And it's devastating to know that they weren't making the cut at work and that you have to stand up for the business, that you have to keep going and actually let them go. I mean, it's very emotionally charged, and it's why we go back to saying being able to keep your composure in that moment and stay level-headed is so incredibly important.
We got a note from Liz who says, I was laid off 2 weeks before Christmas from a home infusion company because they claimed, quote, low performance numbers for the site I worked for. Liz says, it took me over a month to get my severance package and even longer to navigate unemployment because of that. So, Tammy Bushell, can you talk a little bit about the responsibility of an employer in that kind of situation if you are firing somebody and there is a severance package involved? To get that to somebody in a reasonable amount of time.
How I tend to do it, and I have been in those situations when, you know, the goal is not to ruin the employee that is exiting. The goal is to make this as palatable as possible, and it's not a fun situation. So what we've done in my employment past is when I go to terminate somebody, I always have everything in a packet. And I go over it high level with the employee that is exiting. But I also say, my card is in here. I know you're probably not going to retain a word of what I've said to you because you're now and your emotions are in charge and you're not able to listen to what I have to say. So everything is in writing, the severance package, the letter of why we're letting you go, the benefits, what's going to be your next step. If you know, references for future employment at other employees, all that stuff is there along with my card and telling them, contact me in a few days, a week, a month, whichever you prefer. But we will discuss this at a future time because, like I said, they can't listen at the time you're letting them go.
Now, you're the human resources manager for your company.
Correct.
So are you in the position of doing the firing? I mean, is there any etiquette and any protocol for you? And then, Lizzie, I'm going to ask you about the etiquette piece of this, for having the manager, the person who's responsible for that person, actually be face-to-face with them. I mean, we heard Doug Racine talking to the media about the fact that Peter Shumlin wasn't there to do the firing. So is there any reason that somebody's manager should be there to be face-to-face with them?
In my practice, the supervisor or manager is always the one that is delivering the information about why the person is getting let out, the performance reasons. I am there also always at every termination to follow up to say, here's all the severance package and all those pieces. So that's part of the reason why we have two of us in there. And sometimes the employee has questions specifically for the manager or the supervisor. I don't understand. We didn't go over this. And the documentation, which I also feel is extremely important to say, we did go over this on this date, but I don't want to get into those details. It's all in this packet for you. So yeah, it's important to have the manager or supervisor there, I think.
Lizzie, do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I think if the person isn't there, there's a huge disconnect. And almost a real disrespect to the relationship that has been built over the time that you've been with that person. I mean, I work at a 7-person company where I'm related to, you know, 95% of the people I work with. But so it'd be really awkward. But I do think that it's extraordinarily important to have that person and to have the reasoning. And like Tammy said, you might not be able to go in and nitpick every point because this isn't a debate. Exactly. About you getting fired. This is happening, and these are the reasons, and you're going to have to be able to accept that.
Well, what about that, Lizzie? You work for a family company, and it's your family.
Yes.
What advice would you have for other family companies if somebody who works for the company but is also a member of the family just is not performing?
I think that, there's a lot more leniency when it's your family, and there is a lot more compassion. Obviously, I mean, our family has never let anybody go. It's just not the way we operate. We choose to work through problems, whatever they may be, whether that's shifting someone's role or whether that is letting people work from home or, you know, keeping someone in a position. Whatever it is, we choose to work through it because we've always chosen to put our family first as opposed to our work first. Some family businesses say that's not the way to go, and other family businesses completely understand where we're coming from. So it's one of those things where your family business needs to decide upfront. And it depends. For a 100 company, you know, person company, it's going to be very different than for my company, which is teeny tiny.
Let's go to the calls. We have people talking about getting fired or firing someone. Thoughts, questions on this? Cindy's calling in from Putnam, New York. Hi, Cindy. Go ahead.
Hi. My comment is about a time when I got fired about, less than 20 years ago, but more than 10. And the person that fired me was the office manager. I was never told up to that point that my work was unsatisfactory. In fact, she said she had no problem with my work. And I stayed on for another 3 weeks until the end of the month, which was uncomfortable for everybody, but I needed the money, and they offered that. And the owners, when I confronted them directly and said, you know, what was wrong, they would never answer me.
Hmm.
And it was very disconcerting. I mean, it basically made me leave the profession I was in because I could never get an answer from these people. And you know, I thought, what did I do wrong? I mean, apparently I hadn't done nothing wrong according to the people that I worked most closely with.
Cindy, how did you deal with that when it came time to then get another job? How did you address with potential new employers?
I actually got another job with a colleague of theirs who was terribly difficult to work with and who actually wound up firing me. And I remember just shouting hallelujah when I got in my car. that was the end of me and my years and years of schooling and working in this profession. I had just had it. And even after all these years, it still rankles me that I was never told what was wrong with my work. Why is it? Or was it not my work and it was something else? And if it was something else, why don't you give me a chance to address this and change?
Right. Cindy, I hear you and I appreciate that. And Cindy brings up another point, which is that it's not always the case that an employee is going to be disappointed to be fired. There are times when that feels
true.
Like the right way, not to mention the fact that when you're fired, you can often get unemployment benefits, which you don't get if you resign a position. Mm-hmm. So it can be helpful. But, you know, Tammy Bushell, I want you to address what Cindy's saying about the fact that she was never told that she was doing anything wrong, could never find out why she was fired, and that must be frustrating. So how important is it to have documentation for when you're going to fire someone?
That's everything. Without the documentation, there is no, you know, the employee doesn't get closure, but the employer can't feel good about what they're doing because they don't have a solid reason to let this person go. They're letting them go just because, whatever it happens to be. So
not to mention any legal issues, which we're going to get into in a few minutes.
But, you know, if a supervisor comes to me and continually says, this isn't working out, I don't think this is a good fit, I'd like to let this person go. Okay. Show me the documentation. I don't have any. I just don't think it's a good fit. Sorry. you need to work through this. You need to work with that employee. Move him to another location, another department. Is it just a personality, you know, not a good mix between you and this employee? Mm-hmm. Can they work for this other supervisor doing similar type of stuff? So we do all those things. We also do things called corrective action plans, which puts an employee on notice for like 3 months or 6 months so they can work through some stuff. But I feel bad for the person that just called in because, yeah, no closure is never a good thing.
No, that doesn't feel good. Let's go to Natalie in Hudson, New York. Hi, Natalie. Go ahead.
Hi. And I just want to say, in a perfect world, things would be just as the woman described, but they're not. I was let go from a job, and it was really, I wasn't really trained for that job, although I should have been. They took me on without knowing all that. But I do believe that it was more of a conflict in personalities, and I was not let go the way, you know, the woman, your guest, is describing. In fact, it was just the owner who said, we're letting you go, and they even fought unemployment benefits for me, but through mediation, it was found that I was justified in receiving unemployment, but it still left a very big hole inside of me, and it took some time for me to recover, and then I eventually went back to school, and I'm doing the job that I absolutely love. Okay. But in this day and age, people really don't think about that person that's being let go and how difficult it is going to be for them.
Yeah, Natalie, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us because you do illustrate that this is incredibly difficult for the people who are finding themselves in the position of being terminated. Difficult financially often, difficult for career moves, and also very difficult emotionally, which we've been talking about a little bit. And I appreciate you sharing your thoughts. Let's go to Doug in Rutland. Hi, Doug. You're on the air.
Hi. I worked for a very large national nonprofit in the Kansas City area. And when a new CEO came on board, he waited about a year and started firing people. In an office of 17, about 8 people got fired. And they were all given 1 hour to clean out their office. And if they couldn't do it in 1 hour with someone watching over them, they had to have other people pack up their stuff, and they came and got their stuff at the back door. Is this a customary practice to stand over people who are known as good, decent, moral, ethical people? And I'm glad it didn't happen to me. I left voluntarily, but I felt so badly for my colleagues. I was wondering if you could comment on that.
Sure, Doug. Thanks for the call. Tammy, what about your policy?
Unfortunately, it is a policy. When it's a termination, because there is some liability there, if a person goes back to their desk, they have access to contacts and email and other documents that are proprietary information. So yes, it is practice that somebody stands with them. We try not to let that happen. What we do is escort the person out the door, and we tell them, we will pack up your stuff and we will ship it to you at our expense. If the termination also goes really poorly, then we don't allow the person to drive because we're fearful that it could, you know, cause harm to themselves or other people driving. So we'll get them a taxi home, and we pay for that.
Boy, Lizzie Post, I mean, that no matter how you slice it, that's not going to feel good to an employee.
No, it's not going to feel good. And what I love about what Tammy's company does is that they really are trying to be as considerate and as respectful and as honest about the process that you can be. And that's the most that you can hope for. These are the documents that you have access to, the contacts that you have access to, they do belong to the company.
Although
they
may want to say to the people that you've done business with, I'm no longer going to be with this company. I'm so sorry. I'll miss you.
This is actually a great point of etiquette in that if you can get through your termination, understanding what's going on and if you can accept it, coming up with a joint exit statement is really important because what you don't want is what we're seeing going on in the news, which is two separate stories coming out. And it is really, really excellent if you can understand what's happening to you and say, okay, I need to not burn bridges right now. I need to be able to get these recommendations from the people that I have worked with. Therefore, we'll say the statement, you know, I'll be moving on to other employment opportunities. They'll say, John's moving on to other employment opportunities, and they'll leave it at that. But when you start getting into either, trash talking or trying to solicit from other people why this really happened, because the reasons in the meeting didn't seem like the real reasons or something. When you try to undercut it all, it's going to make you look bad. And on top of it, just going back to the whole, being escorted out, that sort of thing, people also forget that often, you know, smartphones and tablets and computers are actually owned by the company. And that information that you're privy to and that you have on those devices is, it belongs to the company. And therefore, it's something that might get called back to.
Yeah, probably good thing to keep in mind, regardless of what position you are in at work. You're listening to Vermont Edition. We're talking right now about the etiquette and the practice of firing an employee and what you should do if you are in the position of getting fired. And we're hearing from some of you with your own experiences, your own questions, and your own thoughts on how the process went. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the legal issues, and particularly for other employees who may wonder what happened to their colleague, why companies aren't at liberty to disclose that kind of information often. And we're going to get a little bit more on the perspective of what somebody who has been fired might want to do to make sure that they're in a position to get good employment after the fact. If you'd like to share your thoughts, go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition or call 1-800-639-2211. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're looking at the do's and don'ts of firing an employee and how to deal with the situation if you are the one getting fired. You can share your story on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. We're asking people to remove some details that might be libelous. Don't share your company name if that's going to get you in trouble. But you can tell us your story, what happened to you, how you felt about it. And if this was something that actually made you learn about your own working techniques, your own abilities and what job you might be suited for, we'd love to hear that too. You can go to vpr.net, click on Vermont Edition, or give us a call, especially if you have a question, 1-800-639-2211. We're talking today with Tammy Bouchel, a human resources manager for a company in Burlington, and etiquette expert Lizzie Post. And when we want to talk about legal issues, you know, there are a lot of questions that arise when there's a termination involved about what a company can say, what it can say to colleagues, what it can say to future employees. So let's turn now to Beth Radigan. She's an attorney for Downs Racklin Martin, and she chairs the labor and employment group for the firm. Beth, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So from a legal standpoint, what are the most important things that an employer should consider when it comes to termination?
Well, carrying on the theme of the prior guests, it really pays to plan before the act of firing takes place. And this is particularly important because there is a at-will employment rule in Vermont, and some employers are confused by that, meaning that they think that they can fire someone for any reason at any time. That is technically the law. However, there are many aspects that in situations that can amend that so that the law is eviscerated by the exceptions in the end. For instance, if there's a contract, someone needs to be aware there may be certain steps you have to take before you terminate someone under a contract, or there may be only a good cause reasons for terminating. Secondly, there are employer policies that you may have to follow. It's not uncommon for employers to have progressive discipline policies or some other kind of process by which an employer will tell an employee that we'll do this, we'll give you a verbal warning, we'll give you a written warning, and then we'll follow up. So if you have those policies, the law will require you to follow them. Now, it will depend on, of course, the language of those policies, and there is some language that can allow an employer to dispense with those particular policies in certain circumstances. But then there's also the sort of what I call the bad reasons that are troubling and can be problematic for an employer. Obviously, you cannot terminate someone for reasons that have to do with their membership in a protected category, for instance, because of their age or their gender or their disability. And you also can't terminate someone for engaging in protected activity, like complaining about sexual harassment or some other kind of harassment. So those are all of the stumbling blocks that can present themselves when you're going to terminate someone. So that's why it's so important to plan before.
Well, and as Tammy Buschel was saying earlier, perhaps so important to have documentation of when you've spoken to the employee about issues that you're having with them so that you have it all written out there.
Absolutely. And if it's the one thing that I tell employers again and again is to document, document, document. Because if you don't have that, it's much more difficult to prove later on if that employee decides to sue the company.
Let's go to Eric, who's calling in from Waterbury Center. Hi, Eric. Go right ahead.
Yes, thank you. I know someone who worked in a school system for 9 years, paraeducator, non-union. The first day back at work after maternity leave, she was in a situation where she ended up speaking to her principal and then the superintendent, in both cases without anyone else in the room. And she was let go by a very short letter. And with no explanation, over 9 years, not one warning in her file, very appreciated by everyone, according to her letters of reference and so on that she got, and it has puzzled me. We're in an at-will state, and just what kind of protections employees have, federal and Vermont, relative to this, relative to being fired. I know that.
Yeah, Eric, thank you. I hear what you're saying, and I want to pair your question with another one that came in about this, what's called at-will employment. We got a note from Linda, who says, in the Upper Valley, we're having a big reaction to news that our popular co-op fired two employees with no explanation to them as to why, only reading a statement to the effect that the co-op was invoking its right under New Hampshire law to treat them as employees at will who could be summarily dismissed. What do you think about this? So, Beth Rattigan, we're talking here about at-will employment, which, as you mentioned, means an employee can leave for whatever reason at any time. And with the note that there are a lot of exemptions and exceptions, an employer can dismiss an employee. But we're hearing now from Eric and from Linda, who have questions about that.
Sure. It's something that does come up quite a bit. And yes, there is that at-will law, but as a general rule, it is always much safer for an employer to give reasons to an employee. Because if an employee is not given a reason, even if technically the law says you don't need to give an employee a reason, it's so much better for the employer and the employee to give a reason. There is just too much potential risk in a legal situation if you don't give an employee a reason for their termination. It's just a good HR practice and one that I recommend all the time.
Well, you know, a couple of the comments here also bring up the question of what employers are telling their employees and telling others about the situation. And I'd love to bring Tammy and Lizzie back in as we talk about this with you, Beth, because there are legal things that a company can and cannot do in terms of talking about why an employee has been let go. And that can be really frustrating for colleagues who want to know, but why isn't Bob still here? I want to know, what did he do? Why isn't he here? So, Tammy Buschel, how do you address that with your company?
We basically put out a very general statement that just pretty much says the employee is no longer here. That's it. It's not open for discussion.
Why not? Why can't you say more?
Because, well, one, it's nobody else's business. It's between the employer and the employee that got let go. I wouldn't want my coworkers to know if I wasn't doing a good job. I mean, it's none of their business. And I respect the employee that exited a lot to not slander them. That's not the goal. It just wasn't a good fit. So we're trying to, it's done. They're no longer here. We're moving on.
Even if the employee then goes out and tells all of her colleagues, this
that's
is
okay.
what lousy
that's,
thing the company did to me.
That's her priority. But for a company, we don't say anything. Even to potential new employers calling for a reference, we only verify dates of employment and title. We do not give out any other information, good, bad, or indifferent.
Beth Rattigan, is there legal reason to do that as well?
Sure.
Sure. A cautious employer will take that position when an employee leaves. You do want to maintain that information as confidential to, as you say, make sure that you're not unnecessarily giving information that employee would find harmful and wouldn't want other people to know. But also, from the employer's perspective, you could be subject, or the employer could be subject to a defamation claim, or if that employee is trying, or that former employee is trying to get work for another company, and that new potential employer gets information in the media or otherwise about the reasons the person was let go, then that former employee could potentially bring a tortious interference claim against the former employer. So there are legal reasons why you don't broadcast reasons for people being gone, and why in many circumstances it is better to simply have a confirm dates of employment policy when asked to give a reference.
So, Lizzie Post, from an employee's perspective then, knowing that the company isn't going to say anything about why you've been terminated or why you've left the company, what's your advice to employees or former employees about talking about their former company and then moving forward to get a new job?
I think if you really want to be focused on the future, you will do just kind of what the company is doing, is, okay, this decision was made. It's time to move on, because if you sit there and slander, if you spread gossip, it's never going to work in your favor. If anything, it might damage your ability to get recommendations in the future.
Why? We just heard from Tammy. She's not going to say anything. She's just going to give dates of employment.
Right. But your coworkers, or, you know, word of mouth, let's face it, we live in a small community here. It's very easy for these things to spread, and it is easy for people to talk. And one of the things we really recommend is that if an employee who has been fired is trying to engage you in slanderous conversations about how the firing took place or why it happened, that you disengage and that you say, you know, Beth, I'm so sorry for you, but I really can't get into this part of it. I would love to be supportive of you, and I can try to help you find another job or do something else, but I can't talk about the company like this right now.
So that's good advice for people who are trying to have an allegiance to their company, but also to their friend and former colleague.
Exactly, is to walk that middle line between not getting too involved and not just becoming that place where the person goes to vent.
Let's hear from John in Claremont, New Hampshire. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi.
Go right ahead, John.
Hi, I just wanted to chime in a little bit here. I've hired and trained employees for over 40 years in businesses of my own and companies that I work for. And I've always believed I've never fired anyone, that they fired themselves. And the reason I say that is that I always sat them down at least two or three times, usually three times, and sometimes even more. And we'd go over what I felt their performance wasn't good enough in any area, or their attitudes or personalities or whatever. And I'd give them a certain time to improve, sometimes 2 weeks, sometimes a month. And then we'd sit down again. And after three sessions like that, if there's no improvement, even the employee can see there's no improvement, then I would let them go. And I think that has a lot to do, and I think that may help some of your listeners who are employees and don't want to get fired. You know, if you communicate with your employers, if they're any good. Now, there are personalities out there. There are managers that don't care. But if any manager that cares wants to keep an employee, any company wants to keep an employee, because it's cheaper to keep them than it is to rehire new ones and train them.
Yeah, John, thanks for your comment. I appreciate that from the employer's perspective, what you've been feeling. Let's go to Jeremiah in Burlington. Excuse me. Hi, Jeremiah. Go ahead.
Hi. Okay. To sum up, my question would be, what do you do in the case of employers lying about why they fired you to the Department of Labor to fight unemployment benefits?
Oh, interesting question. We're short on time, so I'm going to stop you, even though I'm sure your story is a very interesting one. And I'm going to turn that to Beth Radigan. What about that? I mean, employees, what are their rights in this kind of situation?
Well, employers certainly have to tell the truth to the Department of Unemployment when they ask for the reasons for termination. And there's a set of standards under which the department makes the decision. So it's really not up to the employer or the employee. It's up to the department to determine what
circumstances warrant receiving unemployment. So it's not, it's an area that sometimes there is dispute about, and there are some gray areas about whether conduct rises to the level of misconduct under the unemployment statute. And if it's misconduct, an employee may not be entitled to unemployment. But there are many things that fall short of misconduct which would not exclude someone from receiving unemployment.
And then just quickly, Beth, what about if someone feels that they've been discriminated against in their firing, how do they go about addressing that?
The Attorney General's Office in the state of Vermont takes complaints and stories from employees who feel that they have been discriminated against, and the Attorney General's Office actually helps people draft complaints and charges. And so that's the number to call. And generally, you will find that number posted on the posters that are throughout the workplaces in Vermont.
So even if you've been fired, you can go to another workplace, I suppose, and get it there. Beth Ratigan, attorney for Downs Racklin Martin, thank you very much for being on the program today.
You're welcome.
Tammy Bushell, before we let you and Lizzie Post go, what's your advice to people who have been fired who are applying for a new job? I mean, as an HR manager, I'm sure you have had people who you're thinking about employing who have been fired. How should they address that in the job hiring process?
I think it's most important that, kind of like what we've been talking about, is not to slander your prior employer. You need to move on. You should say it wasn't a good fit. I mean, you don't need to get into the gory details because it's past, it's done. And if you slander your old employer, or you have nothing but good, bad things to say as a new employer, I'm not really looking to hire you. It's probably not going to be a good fit either. So,
but should people be honest about the fact that they have been terminated?
I think so. I think you should never lie on an application or during an interview. I'm all about honesty. Our company is also about giving people second chances.
That's Tammy Bushell. She's Human Resources Manager for Edland, a Burlington company that manufactures commercial kitchen appliances and has more than 100 employees. Tammy, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
We've also been hearing today from Lizzie Post, an author and spokesperson for the Emily Post Institute. Thank you for your insight, Lizzie.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up, we'll speak with the president of Bennington College, Mariko Silver, about where she plans to take the school. She's been at the helm for a full year now. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Students of all ages are returning to school in the next few weeks, and along with them are all of the administrators that make schools work. One of those is Bennington College President Mariko Silver. She's been at Bennington College for just over a year, having taken over from longtime President Elizabeth Coleman. President Silver joins us now to talk a little bit about how she's planning on moving Bennington forward. Welcome to the program.
Jane, thank you so much for having me.
Wonderful. It's so great to have you. So, President Silver, you actually started last July, I believe. You had an induction in April, but you actually sort of started the job in July. Is that right?
Yes, we moved up here August 8th last year.
So the previous president had been there for 25 years. How difficult is it to come in after somebody who's had that kind of longevity and has a legacy at the school?
I wouldn't put it in terms of difficult. There are a lot of organizations, whether it's a big corporation, a college, a nonprofit, where people come in after someone who's been at the helm for a long time. And I think it's a moment full of opportunity. It's a moment full of opportunity for new ideas, for building on success, and for really bringing a fresh perspective to a venerable institution.
Well, let's talk about your perspective. Prior to taking the job at Bennington, you worked at Arizona State University, which is quite a bit larger than Bennington. Before that, you were at Columbia University, and even before that, at the Department of Homeland Security. So how are you bringing that experience into the job?
Right. As you say, my experience is mostly in very large organizations. At ASU in particular, it's the largest public institution of higher education in the country. People ask me a lot how that experience is translatable to what we do here. And one of the things that I found at ASU is that the mission, the core mission of all higher education institutions remains the same. It is to generate new knowledge and to share that knowledge with students and to encourage those students to generate new knowledge themselves. What attracted me to Bennington from ASU is that Bennington is so intensely focused on those things. So intensely focused on the student and the student experience and the teaching experience. And I don't think that that's something that we have as broadly distributed in the U.S. as it should be. And I wanted to come to somewhere where I really knew that that was the focus, that the institution and the teachers were truly dedicated and doing it right. Because if you're not doing that, then the rest is all window dressing.
Well, Bennington's role from its founding was to be really a laboratory for testing ideas, to be on the cutting edge of education. So not just educating its students, but really working to be creative in how that's done. So how do you aim to further that idea?
That's exactly right, Jane. And that's part of the reason, for example, that for our entire history, we've always had what we call fieldwork term. In today's parlance, it's internships and jobs. But we've always had it. Students go out in the world for 7 weeks every year in the winter to places as far-flung as Nepal and as close as Bennington and Burlington to work. And then they integrate that work experience into their education. That was part of the original thinking of Bennington. Also part of the original thinking, which is still cutting edge in many ways, though we continue to build on it, is the fact that every student here builds their own educational trajectory in close collaboration with an advisor and then also a committee of faculty members. And so as we build on that and we build towards the what I would call, in a sense, the highest form of higher education, which is really understanding the individual student, what that individual student needs and wants, and how to get them there.
What does having an individual plan and an individual idea for your own education do for a student that would be different than, say, a traditional liberal arts institution where you have a set of prescribed classes that you have to take or a range of classes? Why is that better at Bennington?
I think every student is different. I mean, just look at the people you know in your life. Would you expect that every kind of engagement that they have should be the same and that they should have the same result? What we're able to do at Bennington is really pay attention to those individual students, really understand what drives them, what's missing in their knowledge, where they want to build, where their real creative trajectory is, and to foster that. I went to a college that had what in many places called distribution requirements. I had a traditional major. I was a history major. I think I got a wonderful education, but I also think there are many things I missed and missed out on doing because I didn't have that kind of personalized attention. I didn't have somebody really talking to me on an ongoing basis who was a member of faculty, who was a practitioner out in the world doing the kinds of things that I wanted to do, mentoring me and talking with me about what kinds of classes I needed to take in order to build the skills, build the knowledge that I wanted to take out into the world and make a difference. I didn't get that until I got out in the working world and found a mentor. And finding a mentor is not so easy, as I think many of your listeners probably know, that finding the right match, and it's a skill, actually, to find a mentor and get someone to work with you in that way. And that's part of what you learn in an environment like Bennington.
Bennington College is, though, a very expensive school. If you add up tuition, room and board, and fees, that's over $60,000. I understand that 95% of your students receive some sort of financial aid, but Bennington doesn't have a large endowment. So how are you funding that aid to students if you do any scholarships?
We do a large number of scholarships. Actually, the average grant or scholarship award is about $25,000, between $25,000 and $26,000 a year. So you can do the math on what that means the net price is. And colleges are expensive. All colleges are expensive these days. But as you say, not everybody pays that full ticket price. It's related to how much you can afford to pay and how much your family can afford to pay. Our focus on the individual that we use in the classroom translates also to everything we do administratively. So we really try to understand the individual student's financial situation and make as much possible for them as we can financially.
And you're able to do that despite not having a large endowment?
Well, obviously, if somebody wanted to give us an enormous endowment, that would help. And that's how places like Harvard and Yale are able to give financial aid. We raise significant amounts of money on a year-on-year basis to provide financial aid, and we've been always very successful in doing that. People are incredibly generous because they want, whether it's alumni or members of the community, they see the value of the Bennington education, and they want people to have that opportunity.
So, President Silver, I know that I'm giving you a Herculean task right now because we have 30 seconds left for you, but I'm curious because presidents are often chosen to steer the ship in a different direction. So what tack are you taking?
Well, we are putting a lot of effort into engaging alumni and the Bennington community, both Bennington, our local community, and the Bennington College community that spread throughout the world. There's a real hunger and interest, whether it's alumni like Jonathan Lethem or Deborah Borda, who's the head of the LA Philharmonic, used to be head of the New York Philharmonic, Holly Block, who's the executive director of the Bronx Museum, and lots of amazing local alums, of a lot of interest in getting involved, and that's what we want to do.
Mariko Silver is the president of Bennington College. Great job in the 30 seconds I gave you. I appreciate that. And thank you very much for speaking with me today.
Thanks so much for having me, Jane.
And that will wrap up today's program. Tomorrow, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS. Maybe you've poured ice on your head. Maybe you've just seen videos of friends doing it. Either way, the viral ice bucket challenge has done its job this summer, raising awareness of a fatal disease that was little known a month ago. Tomorrow, we're going to learn from a leading Vermont neurologist about the devastating effect ALS has on the human nervous system and about research to prolong the lives of ALS patients. And you can send your questions to vermontedition@vpr.net and tune in tomorrow at noon. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.